This is East Coast Breakfast.
So we're talking to Chelsea Williams again, and things have changed. The last time I spoke to her, she was stuck at an international airport in Doha. And now I'm talking to her. She's apparently in Joburg. What happened? Where are you? Is it confirmed you're in Joburg?
It's confirmed. I'm officially in Johannesburg. Yeah, so I thought it would be amazing to be back. However, circumstances are not as amazing as you would expect them to be. Yeah, well, firstly, like getting onto the flight, we were told it was a 90% chance of catching the flight. So we were all woken up at 3:30 in the morning. So we packed the night before, but like not confirmed that we were going to be 100% on the flight or not. And they didn't want us to tell our families yet. But I was like, no, I have to tell my family, just even in the slight chance I get on this flight. And then, at 3:30 in the morning when they woke us up, we got a message from one of the guys in our group saying it's 100%, it's a go ahead. So then we quickly got ready and they put us onto a cargo plane. It was the first time in Qatar's, what the captain said to us, first time in Qatar's history that they've ever traveled with passengers on a cargo plane. And it wasn't actually too bad. And the guys were really nice to us and treated us amazingly. They did have to go like precautionary measures and like have huge bodyguards in the plane with us. We would have done anything, but I think they just had to take precautions.
Hang on. Let's go back to the cargo plane here. Were there seats in it, or where did you sit or lie down, or what did it look like inside the plane?
So there's only two doors to enter. So you enter, and basically as soon as you get through the door, there was 9 seats. And then it's almost like you're sitting right in the cockpit. So it's all basically together. There was a curtain to not completely see into the cockpit, but you could kind of see it, and a bathroom. And then there was 9 seats, and there was like a seat, 3 other seats for 2 bodyguards and 1 other crew member. And then there was the 4 rotational pilots, because they couldn't come here in quarantine. They had to drop us off, offload their cargo for 2 hours, and then fly back. So they needed enough staff in order to be able to fly back. And it was actually fine. Obviously there's no TVs or anything, and we could help ourselves to food and drink. And it was actually better than flying in a normal airplane, to be honest. Obviously the luxuries weren't there, but we had like a bit of freedom, you know, to move around and make our own food and drink. So that was actually quite pleasant. And the staff were all amazing with us and coming out and chatting with us the whole time. We felt like we were like prisoners or anything, like wrong with us, you know? So that part was nice. Once we landed, the doors opened, and there was a whole lot of people standing outside in like all these, the yellow suits and policemen. And one of the guys was just shouting, show us your face, show us your passport, like screaming into the aircraft where we were all sitting and handing us papers to fill in. And already with that kind of attitude and the way they were speaking to us just now set me off the edge. Like I was like, oh my God, like not feeling like welcomed at all, or no one's happy to see us. And we literally felt like we were prisoners. I almost felt like, where's my handcuffs? Do you want to handcuff me off the plane type of thing? Filling out our details and then escorted straight into a minibus thing. Our luggage was just left on the side of on the ground outside the airplane. And we said, what about our luggage? And they said, don't worry about your luggage. Like, we have no rights. Like, they're treating us like we don't have our rights to even touch our own bags or have our bags with us, you know, like no control of anything. And they even said, if anybody refrains what we're telling them to do, you will be, you could be put up for arrest.
These people that were barking orders at you, were they airports company or military or police? What could you tell?
I think some were government officials, some were airport people working on the airline, and there were some police as well. I can't exactly tell directly who they all were. They all just kind of looked the same.
The ones barking orders at you, were they in uniform or were they in sort of like
They all looked like they were in uniform, but it wasn't like a police uniform. It was just like formal clothing and with all the yellow security jackets over them, so you couldn't really see.
And then what happened?
And then they took our passports away from us and they put us all into the bus. And then they took the bus to the passport control section of the airport. We still weren't allowed out the bus. They stamped our passports, gave our passports back, and then the bus just moved. So we said to the bus driver, do you know where we're going or what's the protocol now? And he told us that we're going to this ESCOM training learning facility here in Midrand. And Yeah, and we were speculating on the airplane what might happen to us when we land. And this was like the worst case scenario that could possibly, that for me, that could have happened. And then I literally walked into my worst nightmare, knowing where we were going to be going. And then when we got here, that we had to fill out forms. And then like on arrival, they're all wearing these white suits, so covered up, literally like we're the walking virus, you know? And you know, just not making you feel nice at all. And then they tested all our temperatures, and then we had to write down all our details. And then we were each given a room key and taken straight to our room. So there was no briefing saying, okay, this is why you're here. This is how many days you're going to be here. This is what's going to happen. So just all shoved straight into our rooms. Like they just wanted to get away from us almost, type of thing, you know? Now we're in our rooms and we still haven't received our luggage from the airport. Eventually,
how long have you been sitting in your room without luggage?
Probably about an hour and a half until we got our luggage. And then now in these rooms, I mean, we're not allowed to step 1 foot out of our room. We just have to wait for a knock at the door to someone to come to us. There's no phone in the room to even call anyone out if we need any assistance. The Wi-Fi, there's next to nothing Wi-Fi. They said to us, I'm sorry, the DSTV doesn't work. So we all have phones that are half charged now. None of us have a three-prong adapter. So we have no way of charging our phones or any devices last night. And we don't have any DSTV. So basically, but also last night, we were all exhausted. So we just fell asleep. But I mean, to live in these conditions, no DSTV, no Wi-Fi. I don't even have hot water in my bathroom to shower at the moment still. They deliver us food, but it's freezing cold because it comes from I don't think they actually do the food on the property. I think it comes from outside. Then they have to deliver it in. But now, you know, that takes a whole process and then to eventually deliver it to everyone. The food is freezing cold. And I mean, like, it's just not like your basic needs that you need. You just want warm food, a warm shower. I said, wait, what about water? They say you can drink from your bathroom tap. Like, I honestly feel like I have committed a crime and I'm in jail. Okay, this is a bit more of a luxury jail that I have a double bed. But it's just... why I would have paid for my own hotel, you know, and quarantined there and self-isolated, and I would have been able to get room service and I would have had Wi-Fi and I would have been able to charge my phone. Like today, one of the guys that we traveled with, he said he's got a spare adapter. So I walked outside and then they were screaming and shouting at me saying, why have I left my room? So I said, I need to go and get a charger for my friend unless you can go to room 61 and get it for me. And she said, I don't need to do anything for you. So I said, you're not even providing us with our basic needs. Now you're not even letting me go and get an adapter. And I literally had such a huge argument with them. And then I just walked past them and went and got the adapter anyways, because they're not doing anything to help us. They keep, and then also one of the girls tried to get her mom to come and deliver a whole lot of things for us, because apparently last night it was allowed. The lady came to the gate last night and she was chased away saying, we don't know the procedure of this yet, so you have to leave. Like a lot of the questions we ask, they say that they don't have answers for, because this is all a whole new learning curve for them. So I said, well, you needed to have your act together before we got here, because now we are really suffering the consequences.
Chelsea, have they told you how long you're going to be there? I know that the standard operating procedure for incoming nationals or South Africans is a 14-day minimum quarantine, which is a full lockdown with no engagement whatsoever. And then you'll be released to go to your own self-isolation at your homes or whatever. So have they told you this as much?
They've said to us that we might have the doctor come today to do testings, which would then take 24 to 72 hours to get the results back. But then they also said that it could stay incubated in your body, so you might not actually show positive for up to 14 days. So then I said to them, how long am I going to be here for? And she says, I don't know. We're just going to have to see when the doctor comes. Because if we were negative, I would think that we would be able to leave and go and self-isolate and quarantine in our own homes. But I honestly don't think that's going to be the case. I feel like they'll keep us here for a minimum of 14 days, could be up to 21 days.
So they're holding you there in Midrand, Chelsea. Where is home for you, by the way? Is it Durban?
Yeah, Durban North.
Durban North. Now, a lot of people listening to your plight right now might actually be tempted to say, hang on a second, you have running water, you have food. There's many, many, many millions of South Africans who literally have zero prospect of a meal tomorrow. And as many as 30% of South Africans who do not have access to even running water, let alone warm water. They might hear your story and say, you're complaining from a position of privilege. What do you say to those people?
Well, I think that everybody comes from their own situation. They have no idea what we've been through, struggling in the airport for a week. Mentally and physically, we are not okay. And then to be arrived into the unknown and not told what is in store for us. And then to come to a facility where we would have thought that we would have rather been into a hotel where pretty much the rest of the world is going into. And we get forced into government isolation. No choice of what we get, what we want. The more so the fact is that we have absolutely no choice and we are just forced into this situation and it's just not okay and we are just not being treated right. So I'm sorry, but it's just not right, this whole situation.
Some people would argue that our government is overwhelmed with 56 million people, and what with COVID-19 cases around the world hitting a million and their level of preparedness, they might not have the resources to deal with seven people that have returned from an airport in Doha. That argument is going to be said. What would you say to them?
There's other people in the facility now, and they have said to us that they are working on trying to get things like a microwave and like adapters and so on, so on. So they are working on things. However, if this was going to be the case, they should have had this already before we even all arrived, because hotels would have had all of this for us, you know.
Have you spoken to your parents? What have they told you?
I've spoken to my parents. They are just trying to comfort me as much as possible and just there to talk and for me to vent and cry to.
Sure.
And yeah, they really are helping. And a lot of my friends are helping me through this too, because I don't think we are emotionally stable at the moment right now. Yesterday, I couldn't even respond to one message because I didn't know how to actually speak to anyone. I was an emotional wreck yesterday.
Shame, man. Chelsea, I feel for you, and we are thinking of you. And it's a small sort of like, you know, when I found out that you were that you'd made it to South Africa, that you were out of that international airport, I had a little dance of joy here. And I feel that's one step closer to home, which is Durban with your family. And the only advice I can give you is this advice I'd give the rest of the nation. We're all in this together. Try and count your lucky stars if you can. Do what you need to do as far as keeping yourself exercised, healthy, fit, get lots of fluids. Don't fixate too much on the negativity. Try to find the positivity in this. And, you know, do the things that you do. Ask the authorities all the relevant questions. You know, if you were my daughter, I'd say to you, you can catch more flies with honey than you can with vinegar. So try to get some of them onto your side. And I like to look at this as the glass half full. You were, you know, 10,000 kilometers away from us right now, and now you're 600 kilometers away from us right now. So you're one step closer to home, one step closer to KZN. And we'll keep checking in with you. I see you on the socials as well. And, you know, reach out to your friends, engage with them. We'll keep checking in with you. And hopefully next time we talk, you're a little bit closer to being home in Durban, okay?
Amazing. Thank you so much, Darren. This is East Coast Breakfast.